Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we speak with writer Catherine Emmerman. Catherine has taken over writing chores on Runaways with art from Sarah Pichelli and covers by David LaFuente. David was also Catherine's artist on the Hellcat Patsy Walker miniseries from last year. That trade is out, and we talk about that. This conversation was a live opportunity that I had in Chicago at Challengers Comics. They hosted Catherine for a Hellcat weekend that featured a barbecue and proceeds going to the Anti-Cruelty Society, a great animal shelter here in Chicago. If you come to the Word Balloon website, we will link to Challengers' portion where they have pictures from the event. It was very funny, including Catherine getting a Hellcat apron. And it was a really fun hot barbecue day. So we did intend to give you a postscript of the event, but technology conspired against me, and that portion was lost. But the main conversation is here, and we start by talking about moving pictures. Catherine and Stuart Emmerman's great webcomic that features a great personal story set in the backdrop of World War II and the smuggling of art that was happening in Nazi Germany. I'm very happy to be here at Challengers Comics in Chicago, one of my favorite stores, and Patrick Browder was very kind to set up this interview with Catherine Emmerman, and I'm very pleased to see you. Did I do it right, by the way?
It was close enough.
It was
really close. More ski jumping, and I think you'll get it right. More hockey.
Man, I'm telling you. And but no, it's very nice to see you. We met in WonderCon, and it's great to be able to talk now and celebrate the debut of you on Runaways.
That is right.
And look back at Patsy Walker Hellcat, the miniseries, and talk about your webcomic as well.
We actually just wrapped up the final edit on Moving Pictures, so that went off to Top Shelf, and we got the big red check mark from Chris Staros, and so we're so happy. We still have some design work to do, but that's, that was two years in the making. So
ballpark, you don't know when it might come out?
Well, I know that originally it was supposed to be October of this year, but we're a little late out of the gate, so I think probably it could either be a little bit late or we can push it back till the spring, and so I think that's probably what we'll do, because it makes a little bit more sense. You know, it's fresh year, and it's hard when, you know, the stuff comes out in December. It's sort of like the very sort of tag end. You know, you've got Marvel, and I'm sure it's the same with DC, but, you know, Marvel is always like that last push to get those final books out the door, and so that, you know, December is always kind of a weird month, I think, for stuff that gets released. It's like the last sort of gasp before, you know, the new year. So I think we'll start fresh.
I've only seen a few stills here and there, and I went to your guys' website, mm-hmm. but tell me about Moving Pictures. What is, tell me about the webcomic that will now be a top shelf book.
That's a script that's been kicking around for quite a while, and I actually had written it. Mostly, it was written as a play, although, you know, I say that, I don't really mean that, because it was tremendously episodic, and I always sort of saw it visually and all of that, but, you know, we've got a couple of things in the drawer, and, you know, Stuart's very busy, and it takes a lot of time and energy to draw stuff, so, you know, I'm always ahead of him, but it was always in the back of his mind that he wanted to do it, and he actually just started. If it had been up to me, I think we still probably wouldn't have started it. He just found some time and dove in, for which I'm eternally grateful. But it's, you know, I was reading a lot, you know, the Nazis. You can't make that stuff up, right? There's still so many amazing stories that live large in your imagination, and really weird stuff that happened too. Stuff that you, again, you can't write it. You know, you couldn't make that up if you tried. And so I was really interested in, you know, the big museum that Hitler was trying to build, and then at the end of the war there was that huge find by the American soldiers. I'm sure you've seen the pictures, and down in the salt mines and down wells and under houses, and just tens of thousands of works that they were stockpiling. So this story, it's about an impossible relationship between two people. It's about, you know, the spoken and the unspoken between them, and it's about desire and all those things. But the backdrop is, you know, art and theft and war, and, you know, it's pretty fertile. But it's a love story. It's a very sort of screwed up love story about people who are making decisions that they don't really want to make but are being forced due to their circumstances. And not just their circumstances, but ultimately because of their fundamental natures. They can't escape, you know, right, their own character.
Yeah.
So it's, and it's also, it's incredibly beautiful. It's black and white. It's sharp as hell.
I was really struck by visually how it looks, and it is very different from Stuart's Ultimate Spider-Man work, Next Wave.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Was it coming out weekly or you know?
Weekly.
Okay.
Yes, we have not. Yeah, somebody said to me the other day. They said, "Well, you know, I really like the model that you guys have, and I'm thinking, you know, because you guys get it out mostly every week." And I was so offended. It's like, no, every week, every week for 2 years.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you didn't notice.
Well, and what? honestly, because. Like, what did you have a message board for it? I mean, what kind of following, you know, I mean, what kind of feedback did you get online for the webcomic?
I don't know. I mean, we can look at the numbers. The problem with site counters and hit counters and all that stuff, I don't...
Oh, believe me, I know. I go through the same thing with the podcast, absolutely.
You can sort of tell, you can mostly tell when
clicks.
It changes,
okay.
Right? But you, in terms of actual numbers, I don't believe anything that we're seeing.
I just meant actually more anecdotally in terms of, you know, actual, like, feedback. From,
right.
You know, at cons, were people talking to you about it and everything?
No, it's a little bit frustrating. I think it's so hard to get anybody to notice anything. And not even, I mean, forget your sort of independent work. You know, Stuart has had people... ask him what he was doing before Spider-Man, you know? Like, it's... I'm continually sort of surprised by... attention span is not the right word, but where people are looking, you know? It seems so easy to miss stuff. So...
Sure.
There hasn't... I mean, we don't sort of invite a lot of feedback either. I mean, sometimes comments are enabled, sometimes they're not. It depends on how thick our skin is at that particular moment. So, you know, on any given day, they get turned on and turned off, and, you know, we're pathetic.
No, you're not.
Sticking your fingers and, I can't hear you.
Man, so. Well, you guys are killing me at WonderCon because you are. And I said it, and I forget who I was talking to, and I'm like, you know, they're like Canadian shy. And it's like they don't want to, like, cop to the fact that they're really good and that people really enjoy what they do. You know?
Yeah.
And I'll say it because I'm looking at your stuff. You're a hell of a writer, and it's fun to read your stuff. And Stuart's a wonderful artist.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun, you know, reading and getting to know you guys, because I'll be honest, I wasn't aware of Stuart before Next Wave.
Yeah.
Because, and as you say...
Isn't
that
nuts, right? And
it's
been, like, at least 10 years before that he's been working regularly.
Yep.
So it's, you know, the only reason I bring all of that up is it's hard to know whose attention you've captured. Almost impossible, frankly. And, you know, putting it online was really, for us, it was more a way of making sure that it got done.
Okay.
You know, you set your own sort of timetables and schedules, and then you make sure that you complete. So for us, it was really more of a mechanism to make sure that piece got finished. And then, you know, we shopped it a little bit, you know, sent out some letters and got some good feedback back from a couple of publishers, which is really, at this point, the feedback that matters. Because we, you know, we were really looking for someone to... You know, at first we thought, I thought, anyways, you know, it would be great to have someone take on the grunt work of it, you know, to take on the shipping, the labor, and the printing and all of that, because we've done that ourselves. It would be great to have someone else take care of that. But, you know, stupid me, I mean, or, you know, talk about false modesty, how ridiculous. You know, the long conversations that I had with Staros about it and the... You know, the problems that he found and the things that he felt needed fixing. I mean, they were incredibly fruitful and useful. And, you know, that's the reason that you go to publishers and get editors. You know, it's not to have them foot the bill, although that's great. But it's really...
constructive creative criticism.
Right. That third-party feedback, which is what, you know, they do so well.
And so many independent books are lacking that because it is kind of self-published.
Yeah.
And it is that, you know, self-expression of, I'm going to do it myself and... Yeah, I think you're right. I think some works may suffer from that. That's a good point. I was interested to learn, hearing your panel from WonderCon last year, and it's a very funny podcast that everyone should really check out. And I want to say the website that I got it from is dollarbin.com.
That's right, yeah.
And I know they did panels this year as well from Heroes. It was Heroes, excuse me. I didn't know that you had this play and film background.
Yeah.
Please tell me about that.
Oh, well, that's where actually where I met Stuart, although he was in visual arts at the time at York University in Toronto. But my first degree is in set and costume design, and I worked as a designer for film, mostly film and theater, in Toronto for many years. And I've been back to school a couple of times, but I, you know, about 3 years ago, went back to finish to do my master's. So I have an MFA in sculptural installation, and you know that in a dollar won't get you a cup of coffee. So yeah, there's no telling how far I'll go with my MFA. Yeah, my thesis was a scorcher. Let me tell you, there's some reading for you.
Okay,
reading and writing.
Set design and costume?
No, it was my thesis.
Well, sculpture.
The thesis was the use and performance of the uniform in contemporary art.
Outstanding. Excellent. Well, book two for Chris.
Yeah. It's,
listen, Staros.
Tell you where to buy it. Bound in any color you want.
You got your degree, that's
yeah,
cool.
No, so that was great. And, you know, I was on the phone with Nick Lowe a couple of days ago, and we were talking about some projects and stuff, and, you know, I've had something new approved, which
wonderful.
Is very exciting.
Good.
But he said, you know, 3 years ago, did you ever think that this is what you were going to be doing? And, no, 3 years ago, I thought I was going to be trying to convince, you know, first years that contemporary art was a real thing, which apparently it's not, because that's not what I'm doing. Why am I telling you all this? Yes,
well,
so
yeah,
that
we'll
is,
running,
yeah, man. That's my educational.
Okay.
Well, Stuart, we published, self-published back in the 80s, you know, the black and white boom in
absolutely.
Toronto. And
we had a lot here, absolutely.
Incredible, right?
Yeah.
Really heady days.
Great, interesting,
yeah.
Experimental stuff, ranging from Dean Motter and Mr. X you know, Wagner and Grendel and all
sure.
these cool things. So what kind of self-published stuff were you guys doing?
Well, we did a book called Playground, which was like a punk murder mystery, if I can be pretentious.
Would you want to put that stuff back out,
you know,
eventually? Or?
I don't have a big tolerance for going back and looking at things.
Okay.
For lots of different reasons. Most of it is just I'm kind of sort of held together by my own anxiety, and I just can't I can't take it. Right?
No, but isn't every everyone is like that. I make
yeah.
commercials and do a lot of radio production,
right.
And believe me, and I'm sure it's the same for you, all we see are the warts.
Yeah.
We don't see the good stuff.
For sure.
You know, yeah, it's, oh, there's that edit that I should have done and whatever. So
yeah.
I can appreciate that.
But, it actually, out of all the stuff, you know, that we've done over the years, I think it still kind of holds up, and we
really
toyed with it because it was, God, the 20th anniversary, actually, last year of,
wow.
like, the first issue, which
okay.
is shocking. And we, you know, thought about, you know, putting it, like, reissue it, but, you know, get over yourself. Like, it's just...
You know, yeah, but, you know, it's...
Yeah.
I know Bendis kind of winces at, like, Fire. I know that was an
yeah.
early pre-Jinx and Goldfish thing that he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting to see, and it's fun to see...
Sure.
You know, where the art has gone since and
yeah.
where it started. So it
yeah.
is kind of fun for some
absolutely.
People. And I don't know, I'm all for a punk
all right.
Mystery.
I'll
you know?
Take that under consideration
right.
there, mister, sometime.
Well, so what led to, all right, so you were self-publishing, and then,
yeah.
and then how did, you know, did Stuart say, hey, you should pitch something to Marvel, or I mean, how did that happen?
No, I mean, it's been such a long road. You know, he started drawing more seriously right about the time that I graduated from university. So I was, you know, I was working, doing a lot of film, working a lot of weird hours, but making enough money that he could work doing, you know, the unauthorized rock and roll comics for Revolutionary and all that stuff for, you know, $30 a page, pencil
okay.
and ink, like
yeah.
crazy, right?
What kind of art? What kind of art? Recording artists that he do.
Oh gosh, Prince and Metallica.
Hilarious.
And Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, very fun.
And yeah.
And what films were you working on? Would we know any of the films?
No.
Okay.
No, it was really. There's a lot of work to be had in Toronto at the time, for sure. So and then you know a lot of theater.
Yeah. Any actors that we would know?
Well, actually, I. Because, you know, it fades into the background. Oh, who? Francesco Quinn, Anthony Quinn's son.
Absolutely.
I seem to recall.
Okay.
Once. And also, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. What was it? Brad Dourif.
Oh, very cool.
Actually, at some point.
Oh, Brad Dourif's awesome. Very
yeah.
cool in genre fiction.
Yeah.
And Francesco Quinn, it's funny, he made a film called Indio.
Yes, that's
and
right.
An Italian film, and it was an Italian kind of. It was a soldier film.
Yes,
and the reason why I know it is because I used to cover boxing, and Marvin Hagler had a very Lou Gossett Jr. Oh God, what was that movie with Richard Gere and Deborah Winger? Love Lift Us Up.
Officer and Gentleman.
And he really had that same role as Lou Gossett Jr. in these Indio films. He was like the sergeant and stuff. So that's how I knew Francisco Quinn.
Well, I actually,
good looking dude.
Yeah, you know.
Better looking than his dad. You know, I mean, well, in the 1940s, you know, Anthony Quinn was all right.
At some point.
Yeah.
In the past. I did a couple of years as a resident costume designer at a dinner theater, which they've changed their mandate now a little bit, but when I was there, they were in the habit of bringing in old TV stars, or and they would come and star, and they would sort of surround them by really talented Canadian hoofers, basically. But, you know, I had Jamie Farr telling me the definition of comedy, and, you know, Elliot Gould once threw a shoe at me. And,
no way! Yeah. What'd you do to Elliot?
I think we were all just tired and frustrated.
You know, I just read Christopher Plummer's biography, and truly was fascinated by the Canadian acting world.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talked a lot about his years on radio.
Sure.
And it was, and, you know, that's the thing. I think there's a lot of, you know, cool, like, CBC stuff that really does fly under the radar.
For sure.
And thank God, like, you know, the Chicago public radio stations play a lot of it.
Right.
So, you know, I get to hear things like Definitely Not the Opera and things like that. So,
right.
And I'm always curious about, like, radio and things. But, yeah, it sounds like it was, like, this still a very healthy theater world and everything.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so that's really cool to be a part of.
And I got to see Joyce do it naked, so how good is that? I'm so sorry.
Fantastic. That's great.
Really great.
Yikes.
Isn't that great? That's worth the paycheck alone. Oh my God.
Obviously,
I can't believe I told you that.
I'm so proud. You know, I am like the Oprah of, like,
I was going to say, this is exactly why I didn't want to talk to you.
No, no. We can excise anything you don't want, except that.
It's fine. That's staying. Because that's comedy gold.
Yes, please. Oh, absolutely.
Golly.
So, like, you know, so we always, did you want to write movies and plays? I mean, did that ever
No, happen? You know, Sarah and I have been doing projects together, and, you know, we, even, you know, when I was just, even when I was working in theater mostly, we still spent, you know, the God's plenty of our day together, and so there's always just been sort of projects that we've been chipping away at, and whatever. And so when Hellcat, Nicola was getting Marvel Comics Presents together, at least I think that it was, I'm not exactly sure, you know, whose baby it was or whatever.
Okay.
However, he was deeply involved, and asked Stuart, you know, knew Stuart, that had this tremendous affection for Hellcat, for Patsy Walker, not Hellcat, actually.
I want to talk about the difference. Yes, please.
It's a big difference, right?
Yes.
And but so did I. But Nick certainly didn't, you know what any of that. And
the past.
Yeah.
The pre-Hellcat days of Patsy Walker.
Well, didn't know about my sort of interest or possible whatever. So Stuart was very busy, and he said, well, I would like to, but, you know, can Catherine, you know, write you a pitch for it? You know, there was no sort of obligation on his end, and, you know, no risk whatsoever. So he said, okay. And I think there was a great amount of hesitation in his voice. Like, oh God, Stuart's got the wife on board. That's great. Because that's how we do business at Marvel, you know. So I did, and, you know, everyone was pleasantly surprised. And then, you know, we got down to it, and Stuart and I had such a great time with that little story. And then, you know, I've certainly told this story before. After that was so well received, Nick had said that there was enough goodwill that they'd be willing to look at something else. And again, you know, like with anything, there's no guarantees, I think there is a relatively large amount of affection in certain quarters for Patsy Walker, Hellcat, at Marvel, with a couple of people who could do something about it.
Okay.
So off we went. You know, I pitched and it got approved, and they got David LaFuente on board, and that was the awesome, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So,
no, it was you guys were a good team. And an interesting character. I didn't realize that she had this Millie the Model sort of background. And really, you know, I know Marvel fans have heard the name Millie the Model and everything, but it's really like, you know, what if Betty Veronica became a superhero?
Yeah.
And that's kind of fun. You know, yeah. And did you read the Patsy Walker stuff, the original Patsy
yeah.
Walker stuff, as a
yeah.
kid, you know? No,
sort of more as a kind of nostalgia trip.
Okay.
We had a lot of that, a lot of romance comics in the house, that sort of thing, and certainly, you know, the Patsy Walker Miss America books,
Would you pick them up in, like, quarter boxes
yeah.
and stuff, and you just found
yeah.
them in stores and everything?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of stuff that had no covers on it, so it's
sure.
cheap as chips,
oh, yeah.
right? But, you know, they were great because, for me anyways, they were real sort of girls' culture, right? You know, the romance columns and, you know, the makeup tips and the puzzles and
yeah.
the short fiction and all of that. They were real kind of old-school girls' digest in the same way that, you know, they have the, like, Bunky and, you know, really sort of more in a British model, almost, I would say. Those, you know, the books I'm talking about that... Girls' Annual, and I think it was Boys' Annual, too, and then Bunky and all of that.
Okay. I had female cousins that were reading, like, Tippy Teen and...
sure.
You know, and certainly
yeah.
all the Archie stuff and the female
yeah.
Archie stuff. Do we know, like, was Stan Goldberg, do you know who was drawing Patsy Walker?
No
and
idea.
Stuff? I was just curious.
Yeah, I don't know, and that
okay.
certainly is not to say that nobody knows, I'm sure.
Oh, sure.
You
no,
know.
No, no, that's
But
that's
sometimes
Wikipedia's
you
right.
don't, right? Like, sometimes
that's true, too.
That
no, you're
you
right.
just don't know. Yeah, no, it was great stuff, and you know she lived through. There are stories with Patsy Walker and her pals and Khrushchev. Like, it's just like just not to love.
You're teaching me
yeah.
your American ways,
yeah.
Patsy Walker.
You dirty commie! Get out of my high school. Just about right.
Outstanding.
It's fantastic.
And then he threw a shoe at her or something. Or he
exactly.
A shoe on the table, you know.
Right, with Elliot, it was not political. With Khrushchev, I feel it probably was. So
very cool.
Yeah.
And you know, because honestly, I always thought of her as just one of those defenders that
right.
didn't give a shit about.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and you know, no one sort of gave you a reason to care
yeah.
one way or the other. Although you
I'll
know,
I swear you want to.
No, I love how she got the costume, though. I mean, that's one of my sort of favorites. She sort of, you know, blackmailed Iron Man. It's so hilarious. Turn around, boys.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Woohoo.
Well, and then, you know, so for the miniseries is now collected.
Yes.
And it's part of the initiative, but really is a story that can stand on its own.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll be honest. When I pitched it, the initiative was not in there. Nick said, well, you know.
It's an excuse.
It's, you know, it dovetailed... I'm not going to say nicely, but it helped us sort of bring it into
sure.
the world. So.
Well, somebody's got to send her to Alaska, so that's
well,
cool.
That's what I thought.
What made you interested to do Patsy Walker in Alaska?
In Alaska, because it had to be magic, right?
Okay.
It,
oh, sure.
There had to be it had to be magic based because that's I mean she's really kind of a crap superhero. She doesn't really, you know, she seems to be kind of strong, but she makes. She doesn't really have any superpowers. That's a problem. And she had, was it Moondragon or I forget. I'm just going to hang myself all over the place.
No,
she had like aborted psychic power training, right? And she
okay,
kind of
yes,
had a little
yes.
bit of telekinesis going
yeah,
on with the
yeah.
stupid claw.
That sounds right.
But that didn't get completed. So she doesn't even really have... that all
okay.
she has is this kind of like great attitude and you know
yeah.
can do let's go Khrushchev kind of but she is magic based, you know, that
okay.
whole, all that crap with Hellstrom and the coma and the death and whatever.
And I miss this Wonder Man relationship. Were they an item? Or and forgive me if they were.
I don't know.
Okay, because you know, were you who wrote the letter? Did Nick write the letter page?
Some of, well, I don't, I think Daniel Ketchum was responsible for the sort of basic framework of it, and some of it was all him, but there were a couple of issues where they sort of cobbled something together and then sent it to me, and I, you know, injected it with the, you know, the Patsy style or
okay,
whatever.
Because, yeah, I mean, honestly, it did feel like... those teen comic books
yeah.
that my sister and my cousins used to read. So,
yeah.
yeah that made me
well,
laugh.
The whole idea of that was, I think it was probably mostly Daniel, although Nick did some of the writing on it too, and I just, it was so, so great.
Okay. And at the end, and I don't know if those are in the, they may not be in the...
I haven't actually looked.
Okay,
so.
They may not be in the trade, but if you look at the back issues, and I was curious in the last issue, they kind of teased this Wonder Man potential future... relationship.
I guess I missed it.
Okay.
I don't know.
I mean, will you possibly go back to the character?
I don't know. I don't
okay.
know. I mean, she's in, what, Marvel Divas right now?
Yes.
Which is nice.
Yes. That just...
So, you know, I hope that what I really wanted for Patsy when I did this, the best possible result would be to make people care about her again and, you know, really make her useful to the Marvel Universe. And I think that has happened. And if, you know, Marvel Divas is proof of that, you know, then we've succeeded for sure. So not that I'm, you know, saying in any way I'm taking credit for any of that, but I just, it's, she's made a reappearance, and I'm glad that it's continued.
No, and I'm glad they collected it, because it was. It's this fun five-issue series. And
yeah.
Definitely check out the trade. I think it's great, and it's a good blend of humor and action. And it's, you know, I mean, is this the type of superhero story you want to tell? I mean, Runaways kind of has that same vibe. I mean, certainly from this first issue, I'm you know, feeling it. Now, I only read half, but I got the PDF yesterday, and I was reading it.
And you can buy it,
and it's out on the. It's already out now, folks. I know, shame on me. But I want to catch up because, well, first of all, I like the idea that they're having a prom.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cute. I mean, that's nice. I mean, these poor kids.
Yeah, it's cute.
Well, and also these poor kids, they really are kind of cut off from the world, and I thought that was a neat way of pointing that out too, and that they're going to kind of have their own prom.
Yeah.
And inspired by any, you know, pre-prom parties or anything. That's how it felt. It felt like to me. The pre-prom party that I remember from 25 years ago, or however long it was,
right.
Like 25 years
nice.
Ago.
Nice. I think they're a really tough team because they are, it's not like other teams where they can kind of split up and come back together and whatever. Because of the frame of the story, because of the context of the story, they're basically together all the time.
Yeah,
and it's really, it's hard to sort of manage that. But, you know, writing those characters has been kind of a, you know, there's been days when it's been really tough. Because I think what you really have to do is, you know, you have to sit down and you really have to remember, you know, what that was like. And it's just really hard some days.
I was gonna ask, yeah.
There have been days when it's, you know, it's sort of heartbreaking and a little bit gut-wrenching. But also, you know, funny and, you know, trying to find where it can be lighthearted, you know, where the lightness is. For them. So, yeah, the prom was no... I mean, I guess all of it is sort of coming out of just sort of remembering what it was like to be in high school, and it's even harder for them, too, because they don't have... All they have is each other, and they're at an age where it's like they can't even date outside the family, you know? So they've got no choice but each other, so it's no wonder that it's such a mess, right? So...
Are you... Now, I know you have a son that's about to enter university. And,
He's just finished grade 10.
Okay.
Yeah, so
he's got two
more years left.
Okay. So are you kind of studying his
world?
All right, that's
he
good.
Is
just
like,
in case he listens.
No, he's
good.
Like the most well-adjusted. I don't know where the hell this kid came from. He's easy to get along with. He's well-adjusted. There's a group of guys that he hangs out with, and they're all sort of, you know, they're abusive towards each other in this way that teenage boys are.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, funny and infuriating by turns. But yeah, no, he's, you've never met anybody with fewer hang-ups. I don't know how that happened, so.
Well, for people who haven't picked up the issue yet, and maybe weren't reading Terry Moore's run or Joss's run. I mean, where are the Runaways right now as you enter the picture, writing them in terms of the story? What do we need to know coming into this issue?
For me, when I started, I really went back to, you know, I tend not to read stuff on the internet. And when I say not read, I mean actively not
Good
read.
For you.
Because it's just, it's too difficult / pointless. You know, like, I'm not sure what good it does me. But when I started the project, I had read a lot of the Terry Moore, Vaughn issues, sorry.
Okay.
But I had to go back and read everything in order. But the other thing I also looked at is I went and looked at what people were saying about the characters, not about the storylines or the plot or all of that, but I wanted to know if the things that were important to me about these characters were the same kinds of things that seemed to be important to the fan base, because it is it's a book with a very strong fan base, for sure. And so that all started to line up, and I really, for me, I think that there was kind of a need to reset the Runaways a little bit. I think that they had been drifting a bit. So I went back and I looked really carefully at Vaughn's work and at those stories and what... because I love his work on those. It's so fresh and funny and dense, fantastically dense. And that was actually, I spent a little bit of time, and this can sound really stupid, but actually counting words, because there was something that was going on those pages about the way the pages read and about the density of the dialogue and how the story was being told and how they were talking to each other. And I went and actually even looked at the word counts on the page, because there was something that was more like young adult fiction about it than sort of conventional action comics. And a lot of that is in this kind of density of the writing. So this story, for me, is to really kind of capture all the stuff that I love about those characters individually, but to really kind of re-cement their relationships to each other. And how complicated and awful and wonderful those relationships are, not only for the Runaways, but also for when you're that age, right? And how complicated things are between Nico and Carolina, but also how lovely and intimate that is without them actually having to be together. And I think it's the same way for the guys, too, that really kind of recapture that, you know, that spirited interaction that they have. So, you know, there is a plot, don't get me wrong.
Oh, no,
you know,
I understand.
Stuff happens, no, but it was really, you know, it's always been a character driven book, and that's absolutely where my interest in the Runaways is.
Well, and the device of the prom was, I think, great, because
Thank you.
Such a place to put the girls together to
right.
kind of talk and, you know, have a quick moment, and same with the guys, obviously.
Yeah.
So, no, I liked what I read so far and everything, so that's really neat. And yeah, and no, and actually now that I hear you say that too, I definitely recognize and remember that young teen vibe that Vaughn was doing that you don't normally find. And it does. It points to the uniqueness of the book. So
yeah.
I think you are hitting those
Oh, thank
notes.
You. It seems to be coming across, for which I am eternally grateful and incredibly pleased. So.
Any specific characters? Were they any challenge? I mean,
I'm not
going
to spoil it for you,
because
there's a thing at the end of the book.
Okay.
So,
there you go.
I would say that these four issues are in a, like these next four issues, they're really, it's Chase's story. And it's, there's some, not big changes, that's not exactly what I want to say, but the relationships between all of them become increasingly complicated as, I think at this point, they're sort of having trouble talking to each other. I think there's a lot sort of going on for each of these characters individually. You know, as much as I'm trying to figure out what the Runaways are actually running away from in these four issues, the characters are really starting to have some serious doubts about not only about their current situation, but about the sort of needs and requirements of their relationships together. And, you know, for as much as, you know, after all this time, as readers, we wonder what the Runaways is about anymore, since, you know, the original device with the parents and the,
yes.
you know, has sort of fallen off a little bit.
Sure.
They are as in doubt as we are.
Very cool.
So,
yeah, the reason for being.
Yeah.
Or at least together and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And it is such a different book than Young Avengers,
sure.
even NYX back in its time and
yeah.
everything. So, yeah, I mean, have you read all of that stuff of Marvel's as well? What Marvel books interest you?
Oh, I...
other than obviously looking over Stuart's shoulder
yeah,
and seeing what Brian's written.
Nah.
No, not
Who
so much?
Who cares?
Yeah.
Stuart doesn't even read it.
There you go. There you go.
Check.
Is, exactly. I'm talking to him a couple
Spell his name right.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk. For Brian.
And he can't pronounce anybody's
name. I know. It's so
funny. And I've given up looking to him. How do
yeah.
you say that?
I don't know. Whatever.
So he can't get my name right. So that's
there you go.
You know.
It means nothing.
No, it really doesn't.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. With other people, it would mean something. With him, it means nothing. I'm crazy for JMS's Thor
cool.
right now.
Very
I
cool.
can't.
Yeah, and he's leaving.
Oh, I
apparently.
Know. It's breaking my heart.
Man.
I think that just got announced. Yeah, no, I...
Great take on Thor, I know. Really great direction, and it's...
Yeah.
You know, I got to meet Olivier at the same convention and everything, and he was so sweet. And,
and he's got a perfectly formed skull. Oh, my God. He's got, like, the most perfect head I've ever seen. It's fantastic. You just want to, you know... and he can draw. It's so beautiful. And it's you know, one of the things that I love about what's happening with Thor is that, you know, Straczynski, it's like there's space in it. There's room to breathe. You know, there are these moments where they, you know, they take time. And yet it's still sort of character dense and all of that. And for me, you know, a lot of the reading that I have to do for homework or whatever, a lot of it doesn't stick, right? It just, like, it just... I'm like Marilyn Monroe. I'm on a need-to-know basis, you know. But, I mean, a lot of stuff doesn't stick with me. I don't know if I'm getting old or what the hell, but...
Like the details of... Like,
the details. Like, I just can't keep it straight. I have to write everything down and constantly... Like, I can't... I can't... Young Avengers... I can't... Anyways, I try.
Cool.
But
well,
it doesn't...
I'm curious. I mean, and especially, like, right now, is the big Marvel Universe is involved with this very intricate plot.
God.
And, you know, everybody seems to have their little corner of how they're dealing with it and that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and honestly, I think the appeal of the Runaways is that they're part of the Marvel Universe, but they're on their own mission.
Yeah, no, they really exist outside of continuity.
And they need to.
Yeah.
I think they need to, because, yeah, it is a different tone.
Yeah, for sure. You know. Well, it's also, it's like a gateway drug, right? Like, it's comics for, you know, a lot. I know that our local shop, you know, I was trying to Brahm about it, and he said, which is Heroes,
cool.
London, Ontario.
Excellent. Yeah, by all
it's
means.
A fantastic shop.
Very cool.
But they, you know, they did a really good trade in the digest formats with kids, you know, like really...
Yes.
Popular with the schools too, and all of that. It really does exist in kind of a world of its own. You know, it crosses over periodically. Iron Man shows up, and you know, and then everyone quickly forgets about it. So, which is fine by me. But there's something about Thor that, you know, it really you know, the details of it are really, really stick with me. And I think it is because the characters are so strong, and I really care. And then, you know, you've got Loki. I love that moment where they get arrested, and Loki's sitting on the couch, like in the cop shop, reading the magazine, and it's just lovely. So really great. So, but yeah, Thor, and you know, all this stuff for homework too, which sort of takes the gloss off of it a little bit for me.
Yeah,
you know,
it's required reading.
Yeah, and you're reading for comprehension too, which is just brutal some days. But I've started to read Pluto, which everyone is nuts for.
What's Pluto?
It's like the Astro Boy Redux.
Oh, wow.
Thing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Although there's like a Swiss firefighting robot. I don't know.
Interesting.
I'll get there. So, but I, you know, I just, lots of bits and pieces. I just finished Faith Erin Hicks' Ward Ellesmere, which is a lovely, lovely teen book that has a great surprise at the end where everything sort of makes sense suddenly backwards, which is, I always quite enjoy. Ironwalk Jan, which is like I don't know if it's Korean cooking comic.
Oh, I think I have heard about that. Okay.
I'm nuts for that too. I'm nuts for the cooking comics.
Wow.
So, but yeah, I mean, I think I really like Fractions Uncanny too right now.
Very
I think
cool.
That's a lot of fun.
Yep.
You know, it looks nice. Greg Land and his fitness models, you know. It's very good. Who are you using this week?
Do you, because, and yeah, David, you have David doing covers, and, and forgive me, I'm forgetting the Runaways artist.
Sarah Pichelli.
Yes.
I should have said.
And please tell me about Sarah, because it seems like David as well, they have similar styles, and I wonder if, was that by choice of Nick putting you guys together? Is Nick editing you guys?
Yeah,
okay.
He is. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think that there's been, you know, certainly CB is fully responsible. Two thumbs up. There's been an influx of some Spanish artists, and also Sarah's Italian.
Oh, cool.
And Emma Rios, I think, is coming along too. Yeah, there's a certain kind of lightness about both of them, and I like too that it's not like sort of manga-esque. Like there's with Sarah's stuff, it's very kind of light and open. You know, the framework is very open. There's a lot of interior space in her figures, which I really like. It's very kind of light on its feet.
Absolutely.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit girly, which I really like a lot.
Yeah,
and
one.
It's appropriate.
No, it is appropriate. Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, and it feels like a young teen book.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. So
yeah. Without being like a twist on, you know, the Japanese books or all of that.
I would agree.
You know?
No, I would agree.
So I'm happy with that. And Christina Strain, the colors are, there's something very sort of intimate about the way she's coloring it, which is, it's all coming together really well. I know that Nick is really happy. So, and I think, if I'm not totally speaking out of turn, this other thing that's coming on, which I'm not going to, but I
no problem.
Think it may be also with Sarah, which would make me very, very happy.
Oh, very nice.
So we'll see.
When would they be announcing that, or is that months and months away?
Well, it's been approved, but I don't know. I mean,
okay.
Until something gets scheduled, you know, there's nothing to
right, I understand that.
Yeah.
Are you doing other... I don't even know if it was when we started recording, or I think it was before we started recording. You mentioned you'll be doing the Toronto show in August?
Yes, yeah.
Cool.
Toronto in August, and then Baltimore, too, I think.
Okay, cool.
Yes, yeah.
That's cool. And you're here in Chicago doing something fun, and I want to acknowledge it, because, and I'll be by tomorrow, and we might even do a little add-on at the end, and maybe we'll get you.
Because I haven't talked enough.
Well, no, this has been great, and honestly, I appreciate it, because I know that you're shy, and I...
Oh, well, I'm going to say reserved.
There you go. Well,
it's not false modesty, though.
But you've been very forthcoming in your comments, and it is. It's been a lot of fun. But now, talk about what you're doing this weekend here in Chicago.
I'm here at Challengers Comics in Chicago, signing. It's the Hellcat Cookout.
Yes.
So it's it's the big celebration of the Hellcat trade in the first issue of Runaways, and hamburgers and hot dogs for the Anti-Cruelty Society, I believe is what it's called.
Fine charity.
I'm not... I
got my dog from there, and Patrick is actually like showing up real quick. You want to talk about the cookout for Hellcat?
Yeah, this is going to be a blast. I mean, it just makes so much sense to pair such a strong, animalistic, yet feminine heroine with the Anti-Cruelty Society, because it's just so much fun, and... She saves and rescues people. They save and rescue pets. It's perfect. We couldn't be better with the cohesion.
And I understand you were really looking forward to grilling yourself. And,
absolutely.
But I know there's a liability, so sadly we're going to have to keep you in, you know.
Oh, is that true?
When we pitched this idea, Catherine said, "Yeah, I'll gladly flip burgers for charity." Like, no, you're the guest. You don't cook. You eat. You talk. You're not.
His eyes are full of fear at this point.
To work. Yeah. But in regards to cooking, we do have something for you for tomorrow, but that'll have to wait.
Okay.
Oh,
sorry.
Dear.
All right. Well, I'll
sorry. It's not fair to me to tease people.
No.
Listening. Cover your ears, and I'll tell people what it is on the radio.
Well, and we'll do it. We'll do a wrap up at the end of the day or something.
There
like
we go.
That.
Excellent.
Postscript.
Perfect.
Excellent. Man. Okay. Well, in case for whatever reasons that we don't do it, I will thank you for our conversation
now.
Thank
you so much.
A true pleasure.
Right.
And really, congratulations. You know, Patsy Walker's been great. The Runaways run has just begun, and we'll look forward to it's four or five issues. Five issues.
This first set is four.
Four issues. Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. All from Marvel Comics. All from Catherine Nieman. And thank you for talking and then allowing me to murder your last name.
I want to throw one more thing in.
Please.
The whole reason we're doing this is Patsy Walker Hellcat was both Dal and my favorite book of 2008, and when we saw it come out in trade, we figured we have to do something to get it out. And I think as I was typing my email to you, Dal and I were talking, the ideas for what we want to do. That's why it was, do you want to come out for a signing? Then wait, no, cookout. And then she got an email of my conversation with Dal saying, like, from the beginning it was, want to do something that, like, no, wait, this is what it's going to be. As it was happening, we were typing as well. So thank you so much for coming out. We love your work. We're super excited for Runaways. So far the first issue was great.
Yay.
And yeah, we just love the book so much we had to celebrate it somehow.
And, you know, I'm sure we'll link. And really, Patrick, I'll even let you, you know, post the podcast up on the site, because I'd love to have people see the pictures and everything. I mean, these are great events that Patrick has at Challengers, and people really do come out and support it. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll give you a wrap-up at the end of this podcast. Sadly, when I brought my recorder on Saturday to get a postscript of the Great Hellcat Cook-Off, things did not work out, and the recording didn't take. So my apologies for that, but you can see lots of great evidence of the cookout if you go to the Challengers website. The link is there on the Word Balloon feed for this episode. Just click on the link, and you will check out the images from the Great Hellcat Cook-Off.
Great conversation with Catherine Emanman. My thanks again to Patrick Brower of Challengers for setting that up. And be on the lookout. Runaways, the first issue with Catherine and Sarah Fischelli, is already on the stands at Marvel, as is the Hellcat miniseries from last year with art from the Runaways cover artist, David LaFuente. And eventually coming out from Top Shelf, the collection of moving pictures done by Catherine and Stuart Emanman. I probably still got that wrong. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress reminding you to look for our Word Balloon website, wordballoon.com, where you'll find an archive of well over 200 interviews with comic creators and people from film and television as well. We'll also have a link in regards to today's show to Challenger's Comics coverage of the Hellcat cookout that happened the weekend that we did this podcast. And you can see some great pictures of fans appreciating Runaways, Hellcat, and Catherine. It was a really good weekend. Keep listening to Word Balloon. More episodes coming up later on this month. The next episode, Brian Michael Bendis, begins the next edition of the Bendis Tapes. So you'll want to look for that. And lots of other interesting stuff happening as the March to San Diego begins. We'll have pre and post coverage of the con. And more interviews leading into Wizard World Chicago, which is just a couple weeks after the San Diego con. Questions or comments about the show, come to the Word Balloon message board. The link is there at wordballoon.com. Or you can email me, john@wordballoon.com. You can follow me on Twitter, John Word Balloon, and I'm on Facebook as well. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.